All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning hosting for Gabe Kuhn while he's out in sunny San Diego visiting his family for the holidays. You can find me on Twitter at CDunning929. And while I'm not a former Memphis offensive lineman during their golden age, I am a former Memphis videographer during the golden age. So same thing. I was on the field. That counts. I'm joined by the new champion.
Oh, no.
The new champion of the 929 Fantasy Football League. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. King George, his name ended up being prophetic. Congratulations, George. You have the championship belt in the 929 FM ESPN League. And most importantly, you kept it away from Jason and John. Well done, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I feel like this is necessary.
Yes. A little self-patting on the back, but earned. You took a risk midseason with a controversial trade.
Controversial to, like, two people.
And who were those two people?
The two people we're talking about who were complaining. One of the people who made the trade to begin with.
Correct. Was upset that the trade was made. And it's like, well, you were one half of said trade. But I genuinely think that you and probably Bennett would be the only two people I would be okay with losing a championship game to.
Bennett's the best. We just love Bennett.
My team had an amazing run this year. Highest point score in the league, made it to the championship. And then everybody decided to either get hurt or just take the week off in the championship. It happens. I'm still happy with my season. It's the streak of the Gabe Kuhn Show being in the finals continues for 4 years. I think we get half credit for a championship considering how much you're on the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'll give us like half.
Does that mean like every show gets like?
No. Just us. So we're the only one that gets
that gets like the extra little bit of credit.
So George, welcome to the pantheon of winners.
Thank you.
In the 929 league,
sir.
It's a prestigious honor. We will be getting you the championship belt from Miss Jessica Benson as soon as we possibly can because she has the belt right now, and you are also in line with newcomers seem to win this league. And I think that your theory that you presented me yesterday off air is a good one. We just don't know how newcomers manage their teams. And
Right. You
crushed it on the waivers when you needed to.
Like, I went well through my final roster, like, as I'm looking at, like, my starters, I want to say I only have two or three players on my starting roster that won that I actually drafted. Everyone else either came from a trade or a waiver.
Well done, George.
And like,
well done.
I think I picked up like four of them like this week.
Well done. Yeah. Well, and it makes me feel better because no matter who I had played in the championship, it wouldn't matter. I made the wrong quarterback choice, but I would have lost by, I think, 10 no matter what. I had Bijan Robinson.
Bijan
tried to make it interesting.
Oh, my God.
There was a moment in that first half where I was like, can I pull off a miracle? But then Williams decided not to show up in the game either, which he ended up being okay, but his first half was rough. So I had two guys that got hurt in the middle of their games after scoring. If Fannin and Williams had played a full game, like Javonte Williams for the Cowboys played a full game, maybe I would have had a shot. But that wasn't in the cards this year. King George has won it. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. I'm wearing the Jets hoodie I mentioned yesterday.
It's the closest you're ever going to get to a championship in football.
Oh,
it's
the 929 absolutely
fantasy football championship. That's the closest you'll ever get in the NFL, unfortunately. I just think that's the truth.
Probably.
That's the truth. I don't see the Jets anytime soon being in the Super Bowl, let alone the playoffs. They got to make it to the playoffs before they make it to the Super Bowl. So
it's only been a decade.
But congratulations to George on his 929
thank you
fantasy football
thank you,
victory.
Sir.
We've got a great show lined up for you today. About a year ago, I was filling in for Gabe while he was out when his son was born. And George and I decided to do a State of the Memphis Grizzlies where we went through the team, we graded the players, we graded the coach, we graded the team as a whole, and we're going to do that again today. It's going to be our annual State of the Grizzlies. They're almost halfway through the season, so it feels appropriate to do it now. So I have graded the Grizzlies. We'll go over the grades and the reasoning in just a moment. Around 4:30, I'm going to discuss the Jokic injury and the conversation the injury has brought up, which is the NBA 65-game rule for awards, All-NBA, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, yada, yada, yada. Is this rule actually doing what the NBA wants it to do? Is it accomplishing what the NBA wants it to do? Or is it penalizing players who actually play in games who get injured sometimes? We'll discuss at around 4:30, 4:40. Then at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by Parker Fleming. We're going to dive into the Memphis Grizzlies again. I'm going to ask him about the 65-game rule. I want to talk to him about the minutes restriction that the Grizzlies players have been on when they come back from injury. Just a different perspective. Does he agree or disagree with the minutes restriction? Then, of course, I got to ask him, George. Big football game for Ole Miss coming up.
Huge football
game. We got to do Parker Fleming's football corner, so we'll do all that at about 5 o'clock. 5:30, we'll do around the NFL. Got to talk about Bijan Robinson, Stephon Diggs.
What an absolute monster, by the way.
Monster. Some tough... well,
I don't mean Steph. I don't mean Steph. I mean Bijan. Yeah. You know what I mean.
Timing. So we'll do Stephon Diggs, Bijan Robinson. I want to talk about Matthew Stafford's MVP, and a lot of people seem to think that his MVP has disappeared after the performance last night, and I'm not sure I totally agree with that. So we'll talk about Matthew Stafford. And then the Chargers sent out a curious tweet today that we also have to discuss and around the NFL. So we'll do that at 5:30. Close up the show with small talk. And then, of course, at 6:30 tonight, we'll have pregame for the Memphis Grizzlies. So make sure you're tuning in for that game at 7 o'clock with the fantastic Eric Hasseltine. But, George, it's been a roller coaster of a season for the Memphis Grizzlies, as it always has been. It's more of the same. You have injuries. You have jaw drama. You have the inability to beat a team above 500. But you do have a few bright spots. You have young players who have stepped into the light this year. You have Cedric Coward. He's a very real player. Cam Spencer appears to be a real player. Zach Edey looked dominant and like a future all-star in his brief appearance for the Memphis Grizzlies this season. I also think that Jalen Wells is approaching being a very bright spot after he struggled to begin the season. But I think that was him coming off of a horrific injury at the end of last year and dealing with a bit of a sophomore slump. But he's really broken through that. He's been tremendous recently for the Grizzlies. So, George, not Gabe, I've graded the Grizzlies players. I'm going to go through them, give my reasoning for the grades. And I just want you to simply agree or disagree. You can give a different grade if you want to. You can push back against my reasoning if you want to. Or you can fully agree with it. Yeah, everything is available to you. So, we're going to start off with the Grizzlies' quote-unquote superstar player, Ja Morant.
Mm.
So, Ja this year has played 16 games. He's averaging 18 points a game, 3 rebounds a game, 7.6 assists per game, almost a steal, and almost 4 turnovers a game. He's not shooting the ball particularly well, probably the worst shooting performance he's had of his career. 37% on the year, 22% from three. 92% from the free throw line, though.
Very good at the line.
I gave Ja Morant a C. And to be quite honest with you, I think I'm being nice by giving him a C. We've got to be honest about Ja. We're not talking about Ja from 2 or 3 years ago. We're talking about Ja now. In 2025. The Ja from 2022, that playoff run, where he was able to put 40 on people in the playoffs, where you could put the team on his back. He hasn't been present this year. Does that mean he can't be present? No. It just means we haven't seen him this season. We haven't even really seen a close version of that this season. Maybe flashes and moments, but you haven't gotten a long stretch of it. Is it because of injury? Yes. Is it because of his off-court stuff? Yes. And I'm not talking about guns and stuff here. I'm talking about the drama with the team. That has been a big distraction or was a big distraction earlier in the season. October looked really rocky. We had no idea which way this was going to go. It appears Ja and Isolo have figured it out, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I'm giving Ja credit for that. It seems like they have figured that out. He's been engaged with the team. There hasn't been a ton of drama, but in grading the first half of the season, that must be taken into consideration. That was part of it.
Right.
It's better now, but it was bad then. I'm giving Ja a C because it feels like you have seen flashes of him being able to be old Ja. But to be quite honest, I just don't know if his injuries will allow him to get enough time on the court to be that version of himself again. In the Milwaukee game, you saw it.
He looked great.
He looked great in the Milwaukee game. He only he wasn't scoring a ton, but the way he was controlling the pace of the game, controlling the offense, giving effort on defense, and making sure that a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr. was getting involved. Because as I said yesterday, I think that Jaren is actually their most dynamic offensive player. I think that Ja can take over a game when he is fully healthy and when he's fully engaged, but I think that Jaren is really the only guy that I think can be dominant in the paint, has shown an ability to hit a mid-range shot, but it's really just that little floater he does. It's not a true mid-range, but then he can also knock down a three, which he's been doing at a better rate recently. And, of course, he's a monster defensively recently. So, Ja, I'm giving a C. Again, I feel like I'm being kind of nice, but this feels like a season where the Grizzlies are going to have to make a decision with Ja and about his future.
Yes.
I said that before the season began. You're not going to make that decision during the regular season. Chris Harrington wrote a tremendous piece recently about the question of Ja Morant. And I highly recommend people go and read it. But the question about his future with the Grizzlies does need to begin to be discussed. I don't think a decision needs to be made during the regular season. No. I don't think a decision needs to be made at the trade deadline. But you've got to figure out whether or not you can get through a season with this guy healthy. And if you can't, then conversations will have to be had. And unfortunately, so far, we have more evidence that you can't than you can. I'm hoping that changes. He is back and healthy now. If he can stay on the court, that would be fantastic. I do think that this Grizzlies team is absolutely better when he's on the court. I don't expect his performance against the Wizards to be the normal. I expect his performance against the Bucks to be more of the normal with a bit more scoring. That Ja Morant's still in there. The old Ja, I think, is still in there. I want him to be better in the mid-range. I want him to be better at three, not only for his health, but just for the offense in general. When Zach Edey comes back, that pick and pop, if he's able to do that, is going to be lethal for people because Zach Edey as a roller is fantastic.
You have
But if Ja can knock down a three or hit a mid-range, it's going to open up so many things for this team. So Ja Morant, I give a C. George, what say you?
When you said C, my first thought was, that feels a touch generous. I feel like I'm torn between it being lower than a C or purely incomplete.
Yeah,
because
I considered that. But 16 games is...
Frankly, well, even that's only 50% of the game so far.
Sure.
He's only played half of the games available. Like, when we get to some of these other guys, like, for example, the other big one, Zach Edey, he's only played 11 games.
He got a grade, though.
I'd almost lean towards giving him an incomplete. Like, I understand the value and the impact, but he's only played a third of the games. And even for Ja only playing literally half of the games, I understand what we've seen. He still needs to work on the shooting. He needs to work on gelling with the rest of the offense because it does seem like there are still huge stretches right now where the offense flows better when he's not on the floor. And when you're essentially the only true point guard available, that's not good.
It has been interesting to see. Now, I do think a huge caveat there, or a qualifier, is Zach Edey.
Of course.
Like when Vince Williams Jr. was running the offense, and Cam Spencer was running the offense, and Edey was there, I think it was more about Zach Edey than it was about Vince Williams and Cam Spencer.
Agree 100%.
Again, we've only gotten a few minutes this year of Zach Edey and Ja Morant on the court together. So a whole six minutes. So that's why I think the offense looked better without Ja in that stretch. Not because it was without Ja, but because it had the addition of Zach Edey. And he is able to do a skill that, we can be honest about it, no one else on this team outside of Brandon Clark can do. Who, by the way, Brandon Clark... did not receive a grade. He's not going to be mentioned in this. Not every single Grizzlies player that we've seen in uniform will be mentioned. It's the major players. So
to that point, real quick, I don't even necessarily mean the games with Zach and without Ja.
You're saying
even
the games
in some of the games with like the jaw available,
like the Wizards game. Yeah,
like with some points in that Jazz game. Even
sure,
you know,
sure.
There have been times where he just hasn't clicked into the offense quite yet, and a lot of that could be just the fact that, well, he's only been on the court with them for 50% of that time.
Right.
Maybe with more time, he will gel into that true floor general, which that's kind of what he needs to be and what this team needs him to be.
That is my hope, and it's what I'm choosing to believe right now, because
right.
The other option is dark, and I don't want to wade into those waters just yet.
We just finished up Christmas. We don't need that type of energy just yet.
Right. I think that old version of Ja, I still think is in there. And my hope is the inconsistency of play with his injuries is why he has looked so rusty. Now, the effort level defensively against the Wizards was a bit concerning. But again, you saw it in the Bucks game. So I don't know. I'm going to give him a C for now. Again, larger conversations about Ja, I do think will have to be had in the offseason. If he has another injury-riddled year and never looks like himself, decisions will have to be made. But we're not there yet. And
right.
He still has a little bit more than half of the season to turn things around. And again, we've seen a couple flashes of it this year. But unfortunately, I think we've seen more bad than good on and off the court. So, Ja, C. I understand your reasoning, though. I consider doing an incomplete, but I think that 16 games was enough of a sample size
right.
for a grade. Okay, moving on. Second player, Jaren Jackson Jr. He's played 30 games for the Grizzlies this year. He's averaging 18.5 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 2 assists per game. And he is averaging 1.5 blocks per game and 1 steal a game. His fouls are up. He has the most fouls per game since 2019-2020. I gave Jaren Jackson Jr. a B. I gave him a B this year. He had one really terrible stretch of basketball this year. Just genuinely bad basketball. Was one of the reasons the Grizzlies lost some games. Didn't look right. Looked lackadaisical. It was confusing. I was like, where is the Jaren Jackson Jr. from last year? Where is this borderline All-NBA player? Where is this All-Star? Where is the Defensive Player of the Year? Jaren has responded quite well. He's been very good in recent games for the Memphis Grizzlies. I think he was good at the beginning of the season for the most part. So I'm okay with it. Just in his last few games, since the Clippers game on December 15th, 31-28, 22-11, 21-24, 31. Pretty good. His rebounding, 4-12, 8-3, 7-9-8. I'll take that. But the most important one, the blocks, 5-3-0, 1-3-5-4.
Block party, baby.
He has stepped it up offensively. He has stepped it up defensively. He's taken a leadership role with this team. He's led to a lot of wins. And again, I still think he's the most dynamic guy that the Grizzlies have offensively. I'm going to give him a B, though. And again, I feel like I'm being a little generous. Could have been a B minus, but I'm going to give him a B because he's shown up.
B, by the way, that feels right. Like I'm trying to, predict what you're going to do, like based on what I'm thinking. I think a B is for Jaren is fair. I mean, like you said, there was that one solid, it was like a 3-week stretch, 2-week stretch.
Two week, yeah.
Of,
2.5 weeks. It was genuinely.
It was rough.
I say this a lot, but it was like the Space Jam aliens came down, took away his talent.
Yeah.
It was like, what is happening?
But like even to that point, even in his very good seasons, like last season, bordering on All NBA, even his Defensive Player of the Year season. By his nature, Jaren Jackson is a streaky player. He is going to go through some stretches of where you're like, ugh, and then other stretches of, oh my God, this is one of the best players I watch on the court night in and night
out.
Yeah,
I mean, what's crazy about Jaren is, and I'll talk to Parker about it later, he still does things we've never seen before in the NBA.
He's still a freak.
Like the games where he has 30 points and 5 blocks, I think he like leads the NBA in history for that. Like,
right.
He does things that we've never really seen another player do.
Even with his busted
three-point
mode.
And your point about like last year when he would have the not all-NBA stretches of himself, it was still better than the average NBA player. It just wasn't the All NBA level of Jaren. This year,
that
bad stretch was below average NBA player, and that's the issue. Last year, I would have given Jaren like an A or an A plus for the whole season last year.
Yeah,
he hasn't been that version of Jaren, but recent play since that slump, he's been that version. Can he continue to do it? Can he continue to keep his fouls down? Can he continue to set screens without fouling? Can he just continue not to foul at the three-point line on defense? Ugh. It's the dumb fouls that get Jaren.
Oh, my.
But when he has been engaged.
And those dumb fouls get me.
When he's engaged and when he's a focal point offensively and being aggressive and not settling for threes, he can be one of the most impactful guys in the league. Truly.
100%.
And again, the keys to the Grizzlies this year is going to be figuring out whether you can have Jaren thriving while Ja is thriving. That has to happen, and you have to figure out if it can happen this year. You're running out of time. You cannot waste any more time on that. So, Jaren Jackson Jr. gets a B from me. I think that if he continues the play of recent, that will probably go into the A by the end of the season. Let's hope that it does.
I agree.
Let's hope that it does. So, Jaren Jackson Jr., gets a B from me. The next player up is Santi Aldama. Santi Aldama's been, I think, a bright spot for the Grizzlies this season. He's been a subject of, not controversy, but disagreement, I think, within the fan base. Because a lot of people think that Santi only plays well against bad teams, which he does play very well against bad teams, but he's had a couple of moments against good teams to where I think that he doesn't get enough credit that he deserves. But Santi Aldama has played 32 games this season, started 8, 14.3 points per game, 6.7 rebounds per game, 3 assists, 1 steal, almost a block per game. I'm giving Santi Aldama a B. I'm giving Santi Aldama a B this year. I think that he's had some games where he has disappeared. He has had some games where he has taken over and damn near won the Grizzlies the game. What's unfortunate is that in some of Santi's best games this season, the team has not had success. They've ended up losing those games. But I'm giving Santi a B because it is true, some games he just disappears and you can't really notice him much. I would say he has had more good stretches than bad this year. I still think he was worth that contract. You just, as Parker Fleming would say, and we'll talk to him about it later, you don't find seven-footers with the skill set that Santi Aldama has on the street. You just don't. It's a rare commodity. I think his rebounding has been better this season. The biggest thing with Santi that I need to see improvement is his defense. Consistent defense from Santi, I think, would help elevate him and take him to another level. If you wanted to tell me that Santi's a B+, I would also accept that. I would also accept Santi as a B+.
I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay.
The B+ mark. And I think most of that for me is how good as not just good, but also active as he's been defensively. I understand he at times can be a bit of a turnstile, but like actually under the rim, blocking shots,
he's
rebounding
been better
ball,
with blocking.
He's been
the rebounding's been very
massive.
Helpful.
Like
massive.
He's been one of the best rebounders on the team so far this season.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly something that we fully anticipated or expected.
No,
out of him.
Because I think the idea of Santi was you could push him around a little bit. And I think that this season, he has not been able to be pushed around as much. He's just been stronger in the paint. It's as simple as that. Like, he's been stronger in the paint. It's what gets tricky with Santi is sometimes he'll start feeling himself.
And
all of
a
sudden, he thinks he's Magic Johnson. And it's like, hey, man, the behind-the-back passes and all this flashy stuff, maybe we don't have to do that.
Santi loves himself a heat check, but I'm all for it.
Dude, and the thing is, like, he usually hits him. Like, when Santi gets rolling, he gets rolling, and it's hard to stop him. So I think he's been one of the most valuable guys for the Grizzlies this year. He has slid into the starting lineup when they needed him, and I think he's doing okay with that role. There was some adjustment period there, but I think it was necessary because it allowed a guy like Jock to stay on the bench, where he absolutely thrives, and I think that Jock was overwhelmed a little bit by starting lineup. So Jock at being the big off the bench and Santi sliding into that starting lineup, I think was a sound decision by the Grizzlies. And there was some adjustment there, but Santi, I think, has been really good for the Grizzlies this year. I think I'm going to improve it to a B+. I think I'm going to move Santi to a B+. I think that
I'm just looking through his game log. This had not clocked for me, I don't think, until I'm looking at it right now. through the month of November, all of November, apart from the last game of the month, he was a double-digit scorer in every single game in the month of November.
We'd love to see you. What was his rebounds?
He was averaging 6 rebounds a game.
Yeah, that's great.
14, 7, and 6 for the month of November.
Because I also think another thing with Santi, he is a player that is being asked to do a larger role right now than he is actually going to have if, when this team is healthy.
True.
Because he wouldn't be a starter. He'd be a bench guy that comes off, and Santi can score the basketball.
I almost said Santi Claus.
I know, yeah. Santi Claus. I know.
Santi Claus season.
Tis the season for Santi Claus. So, when he is back in that bench role, leading that bench unit, I think that he will really thrive for the Grizzlies. But I think he's been great this year for them, mostly. So, I give Santi Aldama a B+. Now, the next guy I'm going to discuss, I do have a qualifier for it. And
is it Zach?
It's not Zach. Oh. It's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Oh, okay.
I am going to be grading the bench version of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, because I think that that is the role that we will see him in for the rest of the season for the Memphis Grizzlies, barring any major injury to Cedric Howard or Jalen Wells.
Right.
He was not meant to be a starter on this Grizzlies team. He was bad as a starter. At best, he was probably a C- or a C as a starter. I am going to be judging solely the bench play of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Okay.
Because I think that that is the role that he is going to be in for the Grizzlies moving forward.
Yes.
And the bench version of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope gets a B from me. There's some to be desired, but here's his last 10 games.
It's been solid.
Mostly coming off of the bench. 42% from three. You could argue 43 because it's 42.9. So we'll give him 43% from three.
Yep.
Almost 50% shooting from the field. 10 points a game. 1.2 steals a game, 4 assists, 2 rebounds. It's a great bench player. Really good bench player. I'm focusing on the bench play. The reason it's a B and not higher is I am still the starter. The starting stretch has to be in the grade at some point, but the large focus of it is his bench play. That's why I'm giving KCP a B. I think he started the season and it was like, "Oh my God, were Magic fans right?" Now, I'm like, I'll take this version of KCP. He's a veteran on this team. He's a leader in the locker room. And out there on the court, he has been really effective from three recently and defensively. He's helped them win some basketball games, which is all we wanted him to do coming in. Be a veteran player, knock down a three, and just defend as much as you possibly can on that end. And I think he's done that for the most part. So KCP gets a B from me.
Yeah, I'd probably lean a B-,
because
around
of
that
the starter
mark.
Minutes.
The starting minutes at the beginning of the year were pretty bad. And like, for what it's worth, like, to put it into context, if we're including the last game, which he did have minutes in the Wizards game, but he ended up leaving early with that injury, he's been part of all 32 games, and he started for 13. So it's a third of the games.
Right.
He has started, and those minutes were rough.
They were bad. They were bad.
Objectively not good. But since he has taken that role on the bench, been pretty much like the lead guy off the bench. He's been one of the first guys to come off the bench. Because of that versatility and the ability that he has to kind of defend up and defend down. I mean, he hits a three. He's been shooting the ball from the field in general well. Like, he's been doing a lot more driving.
His mid-range has been better.
His mid-range has gotten much, much better as he's played, from that bench role. And just his activity in general, it feels like kind of just throwing him into the fire instead of letting him kind of think on it has been good for him. Lot better.
Listen, KCP is an older player in this league.
That's true.
Him coming off of the bench makes the most sense. It makes the most sense.
No, I tend to agree. And at the same time, though, I don't want to just sit here and kill the coaching staff for the original decision to...
No, I think it made sense. You didn't know how good Cedric Howard was.
You also didn't know how not good in that role KCP was going
to
be.
Correct.
Because
you had to try it out.
At the same time, you're like, well, this is a two-time champ.
Right.
This is a guy coming in here with experience.
Yes.
Right? And, like, high-level basketball experience. Not like he was some just jag on these other teams.
Yes. So, we mentioned him, but the next player up is Cedric Howard, the rookie for the Memphis Grizzlies. 31 games played this year.
A+.
He got an A- from me. An A-.
Whatever.
He's hit a bit of a rookie wall in recent moments.
True.
I would give him an A+ if not for his three-point shooting, which hasn't been great. I think he's shooting like 28% from three over his last 10.
That's fair.
But he's been dealing with some injuries. The biggest thing, though, is he's absolutely an A- or an A. I don't think he can be an A+. But I'm going to give him an A- because of he's been down recently, and it's mostly because of his three-point shooting. His defensive versatility is very exciting. His rebounding is very exciting. His ability to score and create for himself and others at such a young age is very exciting. He seems like the type of player that the Grizzlies have been looking for on the wing for years. I think that Jalen Wells is also that type of player, but I think that Cedric Howard has a little bit more talent, a little bit more athleticism, and a little bit more scoring ability than Jalen Wells. I can't wait to see the player that he becomes. I don't have much to say about Cedric Howard because he's just been really damn good for the Grizzlies this year. And I feel like I trust him already. And only being 31 games into your NBA career and me feeling like when he's out there that he is a trusted body is huge. So Cedric Howard gets an A- from me in his first season.
All for that. Just for the context of it, because I think it's important when we're talking about Cedric Howard and the rookie wall, and this goes for not just basketball, not just Howard, not just the Grizzlies, young athletes at the professional level in every sport. Midway through a season, we're going to, for a lot of these guys, say, man, and this happened with Jalen last year. What's going on? They started off so well. What is all this? They are now at a point where they have played more basketball in a much shorter period of time than a lot of entire seasons in their life.
Well, especially Cedric Howard.
Especially for Cedric Howard, who played a total of 6 games last year.
Correct.
He has now played 31 games. He has started 18 of them. And he's already played triple the basketball, if not more, than what he played last year. And this is, I mean, think about it, 32 games. They've almost already played an entire college schedule, if you think about that.
True.
In a much more condensed time frame.
Yeah. Okay. So said, A-.
I like it. I'm all for it. As long as it's an A, starts with an A, I think that's what matters for said.
Agreed. We're going to run through the next few pretty fast, because there's just not much to say about the rest of them, to be quite honest. Jalen Wells, I gave a B+. I think that his slow start was why he wasn't in the A's, but recently he has been absolutely tremendous. His three-point shooting for the season is up to 35% on the year. He is arguably their best defender, probably their best defender on the wing. He is going to be very good for this team moving forward. Having the duo of him and Cedric Howard on the wing is exactly what the Grizzlies have been looking for years and years and years. You have two guys that are able to score the basketball and defend the other team's best player in moments, and that is exactly what you want. He's knocking down his threes. He stayed confident. He didn't let the poor shooting get to him. And I also think that he has a leadership quality to him that is very important. He is so mature for his age. Jalen Wells gets a B+ for me, and I think he's only going to get better as the season goes on. But he has been so, so valuable to this team. And I actually think that because of some of the bigger names and the other storylines going on with the Grizzlies, he's been weirdly under-discussed this year. I think that his slow start kind of turned some people off, or they weren't paying as much attention to him. But Jalen Wells gets a B+ for me. He's been tremendous for the team, especially over the last month, month and a half for them.
Only player to start every game. One word I think that just describes him at this point. He's just steady. He's just rock solid, steady, like predictable. You know what you're going to get out of him night to night, and you know it's going to be a high level of basketball. I think Jalen Wells is one of my favorite players on this team. He's awesome.
Vince Williams Jr. gets a B from me. I love Vince Williams Jr., but the reason he's not getting a higher grade is because he's never available. He gets hurt all the time. When Vince is playing, he's been really good this year. I love Vince Williams Jr. His Magic Johnson, you know, him pretending to be Magic Johnson for like 5 games in a row. I was like, what is happening? This is the greatest thing I've ever experienced in my life. We saw Demon Vince Williams Jr. a couple of times this year, but his body continues to fail him. And that's not his fault, but it is something that we do have to take into account. That is why Vince Williams Jr. gets a B for me. But he's been valuable for the team. His defense has been there. His three-point shooting seems to have bounced back for the most part. And he still makes some dumb mistakes every once in a while. He gets a little crazy with it. The turnover's going to be a little nuts.
What was that game?
But, dude, the assists when he's feeling himself, it's really fun basketball. And they were a highly successful team. He had great chemistry with a guy like Zach Edey. And he was helping Zach Edey really thrive in his time that he was on the court. So Vince Williams Jr. gets a B for me. I wish that I could give you more. I wish I could give you more, but I need you to be more available before I can give you a higher grade than a B.
Was that one of those Jazz games where, like, he just turns the ball over and then immediately just, like, tackled the guy?
Yeah, if Vince turns it over, he's gonna either foul you very hard or he's gonna steal the ball back. It's one of the two.
I love him.
It's one of the two. So Vince Williams Jr. gets a B from me. Let's see here. Zach Edey got an A+. I know that he only played a few games.
Oh, but he was so good.
But
in those
he was
games.
Unbelievable in those games. He was one of the best centers in the NBA. He was on an all-star trajectory in a lot of ways.
Yeah, a literal double-double. He
wouldn't have been an all-star this year because I know that the centers that you have to deal with in the Western Conference. Yeah. But he was putting up all-star type numbers. He was unreal. He was one of the most dominant players who won the best mismatches in the NBA, and he completely changed this team's trajectory this year when he was on the floor. I can't wait to see Zach Edey again. He's the number one reason I was watching Grizzlies games. I can't believe I'm saying that, but he was the main reason I wanted to watch. And you feel his absence when he is not out there. The team cannot operate the same way. Zach Edey, A+ for me. Cam Spencer, A+ for me. There is no possible scenario in which you could ask more from Cam Spencer. He's been maybe the best value contract in the NBA this year. An absolute sniper from three. He's a dog when he's out there on the court. Winning sticks to a guy like Cam Spencer. I'm glad he's on this team. I'm glad he's on this roster. I think he's earned himself a rotation spot. Even when this team is healthy, they're going to have to figure out ways to get Cam Spencer in that basketball game because his three-point shooting can be lethal for you, and he hunts them. That's the most valuable thing about Cam Spencer. When he's on the court, he's looking for his shots, and he's trying to take them as much as humanly possible. Cam Spencer gets an A+ from me. Jock Landale got a B+ from me. I think that Jock starting didn't look great, but off the bench, he's been
Jock's
tremendous.
Been really good
he's
off
been
the
one
bench.
Of the best bench players in the NBA this year. He just has been. I know that some people can get frustrated with him in a moment, but his three-point shooting has been really good. His rebounding has been good. But he's just been a reliable guy for the Grizzlies this year, and they're better when he's healthy and he's playing. When he's in that bench role, that's how he's going to thrive. You didn't bring him onto this team to be a starter. He has no business being a starter. He doesn't have the talent to be a starter. But when he is in his actual role as a backup big, he's been thriving. He gets a B+ for me. An interesting one I wanted to throw in there. I know he doesn't have a lot of games, but just what I've seen from him this year.
Gigi.
I give Gigi a B-.
There's clear and marked improvement in a lot of the things that the coaching staff has asked him to
do. His defensive activity has been better, a lot better.
If there's any guy we want to give just like random grade because it like just energy, Omax.
I considered it. I don't know.
He's just an energizer bunny. Like,
sure.
I'm all for it.
I'd give him a B, I guess. Yeah. Okay, so then coach.
C.
I gave him a C too.
C.
Really rocky start.
Rocky
seems
start,
to have leveled it out a little bit. I still need to see.
Clearly learning and still adjusting on the fly, but that's not inherently a bad thing.
He's been adjusting. It seems like he figured it out with the superstar player. As a team, I give them a C. It's just they haven't been great, but they haven't been terrible. They're beating bad teams. They struggle against good teams. They're right in the middle. They're right in the middle of the NBA. I think that the power rankings today on ESPN put them about 17, and that feels right, and that's about a C.
Yeah.
So the Memphis Grizzlies get a C from me.
That's just about where I'm at, yeah.
That is our annual
Grizzlies
State of the Union report card. When we come back, though, we have to discuss Nikola Jokic, potential MVP in the NBA, going down with a very scary injury, and the conversation it has created about the 65-game rule in the NBA and whether or not it's actually doing what it's set out to do. Stick around. You're listening to the Gabe Kuhn Show with Connor Dunning on 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning, hosting for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. Last night in the NBA, we almost had disaster. Nikola Jokic went down with a very scary knee injury. In the moment that it happened, I think most people, including myself, thought, oh, his ACL just got torn.
But it was gnarly.
The Nuggets, the NBA, everybody who enjoys basketball got lucky. It is literally best case scenario other than him just walking it off. Nikola Jokic is only going to miss 4 weeks. They think he's going to miss about 4 weeks because of a hyperextended left knee, the team said Tuesday, adding that the three-time MVP will be reevaluated in 4 weeks. So again, it seems to be 4 to 6 weeks is kind of the window that they're saying. He also has a bone bruise in his hyperextended left knee. And I can tell you, as someone that dealt with a bone bruise from an NBA, or not NBA, a basketball injury, that thing hurts, and it changes how you walk. It changes how you move every single day. So Nikola Jokic, I'm glad that he's going to come back. I'm curious to see what he's going to look like when he comes back. But I think that this injury has brought up an interesting conversation. And a lot of people notice, like, okay, 4 to 6 weeks, it's going to be at minimum seemingly 18 games that he's going to miss for the Denver Nuggets, which I believe would put him below the 65-game threshold to get awards for the NBA, whether it's all NBA, MVP, he's not going Defensive Player of the Year, yada, yada, yada. So a lot of people have been asking, does the rule actually do what the NBA wants it to? Is it achieving what the NBA wants it to? Now, I'm going to go ahead and talk about the pushback I've already seen about this conversation. Why do we care about it with Joel, with Nikola Jokic, and we didn't care about it with Joel Embiid or name NBA player here? I think that we did care about it with those players, but I think that Jokic is just another example. And we've gotten to the point now where it's another star player who's going to be out because of a legitimate injury. So we need to evaluate if this is actually accomplishing what it needs to do. Is the story of the NBA going to be properly told in history if you're leaving guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo off of all NBA teams, Jokic off of all NBA teams, because of injuries that they took while playing at an extremely high level? We saw Jokic do something on Christmas Day we've never seen before, and then he got injured. So you're telling me that because of his injury and because he's going to miss time, we should just not talk about him in the season of the NBA as it moves on? I don't know if that's correct. I understand the frustration that some people have saying, well, my favorite player didn't get this benefit. They didn't get this conversation when they got injured, and they missed out on these awards. Wembanyama's been brought up. Joel Embiid's been the main person I've seen be brought up. Just literally name any superstar player that's missed time with injury, they've been brought up. And my response to that would be, I think that it's just time now that we've noticed that over the last few years with this rule, it's just not accomplishing what the NBA wants it to. The reason this rule was put into place was to dissuade teams from doing load management, to get players to not do load management, because they'll miss out on awards, they'll miss out on bonuses. And to be honest with you, I think that they put the rule in place for like a couple of guys in the league. They put it in place for Kawhi Leonard. They put it in place for Joel Embiid, Paul George. They put it in place for guys who load manage and sit out when they aren't actually injured, which is a problem that the NBA has been having to deal with. I just don't think that this is the answer, because I think that it is punishing players who go out there, work their ass off, and sometimes get hurt. Giannis gets hurt frequently. Jokic, this is the first real injury he's had in his career. Wembanyama gets hurt frequently. But they're not missing games just to miss games. They're not missing games when they're healthy. That's a handful of players. And I think that because of a handful of players, we are punishing a majority of players. And I just don't think that it needs to be tied to awards, especially when awards are tied to people's money. I think that's where it gets really tricky for me. If it was just that there were awards and they miss out on it, fine. The history part of it would bother me. Like, not having Jokic on an all-NBA team this year,
right,
I think is absolutely ridiculous considering what he's doing this year. I understand him not winning MVP because, you know, I think that as long as SGA plays a ton of games this year, he's going to win MVP now. The race is kind of over unless Luka ends up going absolutely ballistic in the back half of the year for the Lakers. But right now, it's SGA's award to lose now that Jokic went out, and he's probably going to miss that 65-game threshold.
Right.
It being tied to people's money, though, is where it gets tricky, and I don't love that. I don't think that the rule is accomplishing what the NBA wants it to, and I think that the conversation is warranted. I understand people's frustration that it's just now happening when Jokic gets hurt, but it was going to happen, I think, if SGA got hurt too. It's you needed one of the top guys in the league to have a long-term injury, to miss all this time for there to be a real conversation about it. I think that Giannis is the type of guy, because he's already won MVPs, he's already
won a title,
got an NBA title, he's been on so many All-NBA teams, and he's been frequently injured. I think that's probably why the conversation didn't really start with him. Jokic, a guy who's been an Iron Man for the Denver Nuggets, going down with an injury like this and then just immediately missing out on all these things when he's had one injury, one real injury, and he's only going to miss a span of time one time, and all of a sudden we're just erasing him from the season. That just doesn't seem right to me. It seems right when it's a guy like Joel Embiid or Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, or name a player who LeBron. But even LeBron James tries to play as many games as he can. I know that he gets kind of a rap for load managing, but when you go back and you look at it,
he's played a lot of hoops.
Making all the NBA teams because he's still making that 65 game threshold.
Right, like
Anthony Edwards isn't load managing. I think we're punishing the best players in the league because of a handful of older guys who are load managing, or a handful of frequently injured players who are trying to load manage. That just doesn't seem right to me. The scale seems off.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, for some of the guys that end up being put into the bucket of guys that just load manage or guys that are frequently injured, I understand the big one that always comes up is Joel Embiid.
Just, I mean, he's the main one.
But
I think Kawhi, too.
He's played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This will be his 10th season. Do you know how many of those seasons he's played more than 65 games?
How many?
Two.
Wow.
Going back to his first season in the league, it has gone 31, 63, 64, 51, 51, 68, 66, 39, 19 last year, and then obviously he's only played 13 games this year.
I would also make the argument that those saying people didn't have an issue with the 65-game rule until now is disingenuous.
It's a little bit, yeah.
Because
I tend to agree there.
We've always talked about how it's a problem. And we've always talked. I know Parker and I have absolutely talked about how it being tied to people's money makes no sense whatsoever and is an issue.
That's the biggest thing where, but the thing is, I don't know if that's because of, is that because of the rule around the 65 games being for awards, or the fact that these awards that are just voted on by either players or writers somehow is attached to what type of contract you're able to get?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's the part that seems the silliest.
Right. Like last year, we were having conversations about whether Jaren was going to hit the 65-game mark.
Yeah, so that he could potentially be an All-NBA player. Who votes for All-NBA? Like, you, me.
I wish.
I mean, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's...
Right.
It's the NBA media, if I remember correctly. But I'm sure I know there are some awards that are voted on by media. And I understand that availability is a huge part of, you know, whether you are that type of valuable to your teams and should be up for grabs for these. I don't have as much a problem with that. I think I have more of an issue with the fact that these awards that are voted on by people, it's not just like a statistic. It isn't something concrete that is then baked into your contract, that's baked into the CBA, that's baked into these aprons that irreparably change the way that teams are built for years and years and years and years. Like, think about it like this. Look at what the Boston Celtics had to do prior to this season.
Well, because they built a great team.
Built a great team, and because of the apron system and because of the type of contracts they essentially had to give to their players, being supermaxes or maxes, to Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, it irreparably changed the formula for that franchise. Either they were going to continue to take the penalties, or completely restructure their organization because of awards that are voted on by the media?
Right. And again, The 65-game rule, it's newer. It's only been around for a few seasons.
Right.
It's just, I think that we have enough evidence now that it's not accomplishing what the NBA wants. The NBA has a load management issue. It has a kind of a tanking issue. I think that some teams are beginning to realize that tanking doesn't really work.
Utah.
The Sixers process. I mean, Detroit.